This is Wide Open, a series on how to embrace change and challenge your ways of thinking so you can level up your life, open up to new experiences, and pay it forward to those who need it. I'm your host, Tony Gonzalez. The next guest on Wide Open is David Spade, legend of Hollywood, and a friend of mine. You know him from movies Joe Dirt, Tommy Boy, Saturday Night Live, Emperor's New Groove, Hotel Transylvania. I mean, the list goes on and on, the accolades and the credits that he's had. This guy is a very, very funny person, but also a very interesting person. And the conversation we're going to have today, we're going to touch all topics. We're going to talk about parenting. We're going to talk about relationships, even though he's never been married, but I'm sure he has something good to say about that. But we will also get into a very trying time in his life during the Saturday Night Live days. And I didn't know this, but apparently it was very, very rough for him. It was a rough patch for him. And it kind of chiseled him, in my opinion. It's something, I don't know if he would say that, but I would definitely say that it chiseled him and made him the person who he eventually became, that star, that you know, world-renowned funny man. And sometimes you have to go through a valley in order to get up that mountaintop. And he certainly has done that. And he tells us that story in full detail. And I thought it was great. That was one thing that I took away from the conversation that I thought was, wow, I've never heard that about him. So among that, some other really, really good things. You're going to love this show. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. All right, welcome back to the next episode. This is Wide Open. And I'm your host, Tony Gonzalez, and I am sitting now with a Hollywood legend, a truly, truly funny man. I got to know him a while ago, but this guy has a Hollywood star. I don't know if you knew this.
A star on the Walk of Fame?
Star on the Walk of Fame. Yeah. I did not know that. I should have known it. We're talking about David Spade here. Joe Dirt, I could say, go through all your credentials. You got so many of them.
Down to about 2,000 stars when you said Walk of Fame. And then you whittle out Woody Woodpecker, you whittle out this guy, and it gets down to about 1,000. And then it gets closer and closer. But yeah, you just gave it away. David Spade, yeah, there's a lot of, there's some credits some people like, some don't. But overall, they usually know me from something.
Yeah, well, my kids knew who you were.
Oh, they
as
did?
The Emperor.
Oh, the Emperor's New Groove.
New Groove. So you're a big hit around here.
I'm lucky that's on the res, because that gets you a wave of kids and then that don't know the other stupid stuff. Hotel Transylvania got me back in the mix with kids. So any cartoon movie is a blessing to be involved with.
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy man. You got the new show Lights Out on Comedy Central. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but as always on Wide Open, I don't even know if you know too much about this show, what we talk about on this show.
A little bit. Skimmed the briefing.
Well, you're going to give people some advice and inspire some people.
Oh, wow. Okay, sure.
This is going to be fantastic. But real quick, I just want to tell you, I don't know if you remember meeting me, because I was thinking back.
Let me check my diary.
How I met you. I think it was Craig, right? Was it Craig Lay, a mutual friend of ours?
That buffoon, yeah.
At Rock and
Riley's.
Sure
Riley's. It was, I'm sure.
But after that, I actually got to know you a little bit better. We did a pilot together.
Do
you remember the pilot?
Was it the one with the Tina Fey pilot?
Yeah, Tina Fey pilot that did not get picked up.
But I know her one glitch. I always am shocked that something Tina Fey didn't work. So yeah. I saw J.B. Smoovies on the show yesterday.
Yeah, J.B.
He was like, we did a pilot together. Right. That's right. He was in it too.
Are pilots something you guys do? You do that a lot? Is that totally normal? And then, hey, I didn't get picked up.
It's a big deal at the time, but I haven't been involved with that many pilots, to be honest. When I did Just Shoot Me, it was smart in hindsight. I just got off SNL. This isn't even your question, but we're filling time.
Yeah, this is good.
We can run. So I get off SNL and you usually get a freebie. Like they'll maybe give you your own show on a network or something just to see if you can take that crowd with you from SNL and do anything with it. I wasn't some huge star, but I was on SNL. We'd done a few movies. So they said, do you want your own show? Or actually, we have a show that's already got a cast of 4 and it's got a great writer from Larry Sanders and some guys from Frasier, whatever. And it was just going to be on the lineup. And they went all the way to New York to announce it, those upfronts, and they pulled it. Laura San Giacomo was already out there, and they pulled it last minute and said, it's just missing something. It's just not quite enough. Mm. Would you want to join it? because it was my own managers were producing it. And I watched it and I said, I was just in the toughest competitive world of SNL with Sandler and Chris Rock and Conan O'Brien and Bob Odenkirk. And, you know, every great writer was there and every great performer, Mike Myers and Dana Carvey and Dennis Miller. Of course, the list goes on. And so I thought, oh, here's four people that aren't hardcore comedy writers or comedians. And it's a comedy. I could keep up with them. And there was no blonde. There was no like someone my age and my vibe. So I said, yeah, I'll take the fifth lead for less money because I think this has a chance. So they added me to it, reshot the pilot, and it went right on, you know, right into a mid-season replacement and did well. And then it got picked up for six more years. I mean, we just kept getting picked up. And it was the greatest thing to happen. It was perfect. So that was mostly to pat myself on the back, but also to say I didn't do a pilot for that. And then I went from that. I took a year off and then Eight Simple Rules with John Ritter, Kaley Cuoco. He passed away and they said, would you join it to help keep it going? I said, I don't want to replace John Ritter. And they said, it's a whole new character. I said, I got to wait. I can't take that hit. And then James Garner, old great actor.
Yeah.
I loved. He joined and the critics are nicer to him. So they let him get a pass. And then a month later, I snuck on. Uh-huh. And then we did that two more years. So we kept that on. I left that. And then I was going to do a movie and Sandler said, I have a pilot for Rules of Engagement. They want to get rid of somebody and put you in. If you do it, they'll pick it up. But he goes, it's only six episodes. Then you can go to the movie. I go, all right. And I'd do anything for Sandler. And I said, I wasn't really ready to do another show. People say the dumbest things. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to go work again. But I just thought I just did this. But I went and did it, and that was six more years. So Tina's was maybe the only pilot, you know? But you really get into a pilot for that 2 weeks or whatever. You know, you focus, you want it to be great, you stress over it. And then you shove it into the pile, and then one day they say they usually don't make it. So I got lucky with the other shows. They were sort of along the way already. But starting from scratch with a pilot, so many things can go wrong. And that one, something went wrong, I guess.
Yeah, well.
It's a fun experience to do, right? this is a good experience. You like
it? Yeah, I loved it.
Be around the set. I always said, you should be like The Rock. This guy's a good looking, articulate, studly guy. I say it to myself in the mirror every day.
Yeah.
And then I said it to you one day.
Good.
This guy, but Tony could be great. So you never know. You already got a great TV presence, and so you're fine.
Oh, well, we'll get into my acting prowess in a little bit.
Sure.
But before we start with everything, I wanted to take us back to when you were growing up. I love hearing people's backstories because I believe everybody has something in common. The story might be different, but the same feelings are there. You grew up with two brothers, single mother.
Yeah.
Real quickly, just when you were growing up, what was it like around your household?
This is a podcast. There's no such thing as real quickly. When I was born...
Well, you're the one who's got to go.
I have so many yarns to spin about my life. But I think what you might mean is that, you know, the common denominators with other people that I would be relatable are, it's funny because people from Hollywood are like, Mel Gibson, he was from Iowa or something. You know, Ashton Kutcher was from, you know, wherever he was from, somewhere in the Midwest. And they made it. But it's true. It's almost like everyone's from somewhere. I mean, it's very rarely someone is born in Hollywood and then they're the Hollywood star. People come in, so there's always that weirdness that you made it from somewhere else because it seems impossible. You know, there's probably a similar story with you. I don't know where you were brought up, but I don't think you were brought up from day one going, I'm going to be a superstar football player. It doesn't seem like it happens, you know. You can dream about it, but I never dreamed of being a comedian. I guess they call it a broken family. The dad left when I was four. So I think people relate to being in a divorce and I was angry about it. I remember I had a temper and because I was just with my mom. My dad we couldn't call him. He had to call us. I didn't like that part of it. Later, I realized that was sort of a control thing, you know. My mom would just say, oh, he's not at a phone number. Oh, we can't get a hold of him. It was just all covering for him because he didn't want to call us. And then, you know, birthdays, he wouldn't show up. And if you were sick, you couldn't call him. That's the hard part about having kids and bailing because those things really leave a mark, you know. Mentally. And so my mom did the best she could, never had any money. We scraped through. My brother got in trouble. We were in some tough towns. I'm a total pussy. That didn't help. But, you know, I just didn't want to get beat up all the time. So I'm like, oh, lunch money, here it is. Here's all, you know, what do you want, singles? So I never put up a fight. And so now I get a little older, I get in high school. And then, you know, start doing stand-up just out of high school because I was bored. And I tried comedy in high school, like talent shows, but never crossed my mind to be stand-up. Never SNL.
But you were always funny?
I was sort of like... sort of my style now is sort of whispering jokes to people and just saying it under my breath. And so it wasn't a full swing, you know, so people couldn't go, that's so stupid. So I would just say it quietly and just see if they laughed, I go, oh, okay. But if they didn't, I'd be like, it wasn't a joke. I was just talking. Uh-huh.
But it was never in your mind that, okay, this is something that potentially I can make a, I want to make a go, not make a living, but I really like this. I might see if
I did this talent show in high school. If you were in a speech class, you got to do a show called Extravaganza, and 2 days a year, the whole student body would come. We'd do like SNL sketches we ripped off and this and singing and dancing. So I would try SNL sketches and we'd reenact and we'd write a few stupid ones, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really like I was a theater major. I just liked the comedy aspect. The acting wasn't probably off the charts, but it was definitely got my mind thinking of how to write a sketch and how to be out in front of people. And then when everyone went off to college, I was too dumb. So I was in my own community college and I started going to comedy nights because I was bored. Uh-huh. Missed my friends. I liked comedy. I go, oh, there's places you go and they just do it. I'd see him and I was blown away going, this guy's talking for an hour. Is he just making it up? I couldn't believe it. Everything was so clever. I said, if I could ever try that, which was ballsy, but I go, I just want to try it. So I wrote some jokes down and I tried it and then I was bad, but they said my throwaway jokes between my jokes were funny. Turned out to be like my whole style the rest of my life.
Really?
I kept trying to think, what do they mean by that? Anyway, that got me into some stand-up.
So when you are going through that, you said they sucked or whatever. When you start to get that feedback, first of all, I think there's something, I don't know if it's innate in people to actually want to go up there and audition. You have to audition now, right? If you want to go be at a comedy store.
Oh yeah,
store.
Comedy stores, yeah, it's impossible.
And then when you do get up there, you're probably not going to be good at the beginning. And do you have any stories of getting booed off stage or feeling like you never went up there and said, man, I just bombed. Did you ever come off going, man, I don't want to do this anymore?
Yeah, there was a turning point when I was in college where I'd been doing it about 2 years and it was so nerve-wracking. I did a show for all of Arizona State University for Greek Week. They had like a big Greek sing where they had all the fraternities and sororities put on a show, each sorority, fraternity, and it was in front of 3,000 people. And in between, they'd have a singer just while they changed the stage, and you had to audition for it. So I went in and said, I went in to the audition, I signed up, and there's like 4 people there, and I go, can I try stand-up? Because they don't, you just need 10 minutes killed, right? And they go, well, we've never had a stand-up. So I go, okay, I did stand up. And they said, okay. They're just looking for something to kill time. Mm. And it's easy to have me walk out in front of the curtain instead of pushing a piano or whatever. So I was backstage and I was sort of sickened by the amount of girls out there. And everyone from school that I had to impress was in one room. And it made me so sick going, this is it. If I don't do well, I'm done at school. I didn't even think that far. And so I was back there and, I was backstage so sick and I made a deal. I said, if I'm not good tonight, that's it. I quit. I have to do another job. And I went out and I started slow. 10 minutes is actually pretty long. I started slow and they didn't know what I was doing. And then someone laughed and I said something about this guy. And then they go, oh, he's doing jokes. Because no one's a stand-up comic, especially back then. And so they laughed. I did something about the DMV. And I'm like, ASU, this, that. And I got off to such a huge applause. I go, that's it. I'm in.
In forever.
And that was it. That was a turning point. I go, not turning back. I left school, I had 4 comedy nights a week. So it was $20 a pop, $80. I just wanted to not borrow money from people. I said, if I can have a job, I'll never make a lot of money, but I just want to do this. And then I had a crummy old car and I just said, I can skim. So slowly made more, but it took so long.
Who was helping you through this whole process?
You know,
do you have a
funny
mentor?
What's funny is that you probably get people that, you know, you have a couple things going. You have football and you have this. People that want help getting in or, I mean, maybe getting tryouts for teams. I don't even know what you would get, but people for sports, for this, for, you know, broadcasting. I get people that you know, want to be in comedy, want to be this. And it's funny because everyone I know had no connections. Chris Rock, Sandler, me, all the guys that actually did well, you know, my brother and Kate Spade and that whole thing, no connections. And then you get older and then everyone wants a connection from you to get somewhere. And it's so hard because in a way you don't want to help people, but in a way you do. Mm-hmm. But you think, how the F did I say fuck? How did I get anywhere without one person in my life being in showbiz, without one person having anything to do with anything? You just have to be good every time you're in front of someone because they talk. Everything's an audition. You're in this, I'm on this, I just go into a meeting. And that has a snowball effect that one day enough people think you're good.
Uh-huh. Well, so like advice, so when you would come home feeling bad, like all of us do every once in a while.
Yeah,
I mean, did you, was it your brother or was it your mom or did you?
I would have other comedians. Uh-huh. We were all sort of in the same boat and they would say, I like that one, I like that one. Maybe you should, look to the left when you say that, or maybe I think you're looking at your notes too much. And we would sort of help each other as a camaraderie because we all, there wasn't that much jealousy because we were all the same amount of crumminess. Mm-hmm. There was no like superstar. There's one guy there that was hosting every night and I like hung out with him and he was like such a star to me and we just go drink and hang out and he would bring me to comedy nights. He was cool. But other than that, yeah, my mom was very supportive. She's a very creative person. She writes. So she got it. My brother Andy got it. And you need that. My dad, the other flip side for support, you're like, the other odd support I had was from my dad. He would start coming to these because he was like a bit of a bar fly around Scottsdale. So he'd hear about these comedy nights and they started to be more popular. So he'd come and then I was one of the comedians. So they would give him free drinks and he'd hang out. So I liked him around because he was not around much, but it was this weird way he was coming in, you know what I mean? That's not the way you want your dad hanging around, to get a little piece of the pie when it was the most microscopic pie, a blip of a star in Scottsdale in a few comedy clubs. And then when it got bigger, then he's like flying with me to go to Letterman. You know, he wants to be a part of everything. And it made me get mad later in life that that was why he showed up.
So after that though, you start to crush it, right? You're starting to feel pretty good about what your skills are.
Yeah.
And then SNL happens?
No, just moved to LA, stayed on a couch, got on the improv, Comedy Store said no. And I got probably two spots a week. $28 a spot. Go get that little rotisserie chicken at Ralph's and eat that at night. Go to the improv, try to charge food and hope. You know, I wasn't making enough to charge enough food. It was like a push. I'd look in the checkbox. They go like this, spade, 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 nothing today. And but they would go like this, let me see, spade, spade, Seinfeld, 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 spade, there you are. And I go, he has that many checks? And I actually contemplated stealing them because he never cashed them. And I go, there's probably over $500 in there worth of checks. That would change my life. So I remember that stuck in my head, Seinfeld. I was like, he was like the master back then.
Ah, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary, Dying of Laughter. Mm-hmm. You ever seen it or Dying Up There? It's fascinating. It's a look because I look up to you guys. I'm talking the comedians because as an athlete, I mean, it's pretty simple. If I can go out there and catch ball, I'm going to be on the team or whatever, you know, where you guys, it's so subjective.
Yeah. I mean, but what you're saying is like people look up to you too, but you do have a natural thing. I've seen you play, but I was went to see Sean Penn do a movie once. We were just hanging out for lunch. I saw him at lunch. Then we went back in to do a scene and he's talking and BSing and lighting a cigarette and they go, well, they need you. And I hadn't been on many movies, but I walk over with him and they're like, okay, rolling. He says, why don't you stand me here behind the camera? And he walks out and he does this crazy scene where I go, you weren't thinking about that for the last hour? Yeah. Like I have to be alone in my trailer. You got to go over your lines. You got to think about how am I going to play this? And that made me think, that's why he's so casual, because he's just good at it. And if you're really good at someone, it's actually hard to teach. I mean, acting, they teach and stuff, and some people are just very good. Football might be the same way. With stand-up, they have all these stand-up comedy classes, and I always think, I don't think it's either you have a little funny bone in you or you don't. And
so what about when you suck? Well, I know you're a pro. Well, even I'm sure you. Yeah, you still bomb. So how do you get over the bombing, because that's what really stood out in me in the doc, is these people, famous comedians, talking about their worst experiences up in front of a stage where they get booed off or hecklers got them, or where they bombed in front of their family. Or one guy was talking about he bombed in front of Michael Jordan and he was crying.
Yeah, of course.
So how do you deal with that, the setbacks? What do you do mentally? What do you do? What's your routine to say, you know what, I suck tonight, how do I get better?
Get back on track to say, I'm good enough to keep going. I've made it this far. But it's a bit of the truth hurts, because if you're bombing, you're not doing well. I mean, there's no two ways about it. That whole room did not like you. It falls into, you're not going to please all the people all the time. Mm-hmm. And I did one college where you're scheduled to do 45 minutes, right? It's not a corporate gig. It's a college gig. I did it during SNL. So I saw Dennis Miller and Norm Macdonald, these old SNL guys. We did a gig last week in Oklahoma and we were reminiscing about these stories. I did Sacred Heart University, I think it was. And you know, on the weekends, Dana Carvey does one, I do one, Sandler goes. I said, I'm doing Sacred Heart. I get a car service out there. I'm getting pretty decent money, maybe like 10 grand. But I bombed so horrifically. Like, they were all on a carpet or on a fireplace. I'm like standing on a 1-inch stage. It was all ghetto. You know, I had like PV amp from some guy's van and my French fry lights from Wendy's. So I go on and nothing's clicking. Now I'm burning through my material too fast, because it's usually, there's a few beats in between. Yeah. But your mind is spinning when you're bombing, because all you can think about, that you get spooked like a horse. Now the only thing in my mind is, why aren't I doing well? And I can't make room for my new joke. I have to go, what's next? Instead of going, obsessing about what's going on here. So I crush through it, pure crickets. I get off and the guy goes, we're holding your check, because he can't say I'm bombing because it's subjective. He goes, you didn't do 45, you did 43.
Really?
My contract was for 45, so he got me on a technicality. And I go, I mean, they were tough. He goes, needed 45. And then my agents beat him up to get it because they said it would look bad, but he wanted out.
So what happens when you go home that night?
I go home and get the other guys from work to tell me it's cool. Uh-huh. It's very hard mentally, and it's very hard to go forward. And it's very hard. I watch this Hard Knocks or something like football. Yeah. Same thing. They get cut and they have to sit with the coach guys to tell them. I would be running the other way. No one wants to tell you in person. It's just such a heartbreaker. And then you go, what are they doing? They go back to their wife, their kid. How do you pick yourself back up? That's a real crusher. And that's, everyone's been in those positions. And to keep going is the single hardest part. It's always, it's easy to do good.
Yeah.
It's easy when things are great. I'm on a new show now. It's fun. Things, but when you get something canceled or you get this or you bomb, that's what makes you tough.
Yeah. That's what I admire you guys so much for. That's what I mean when I say admire you guys, because the amount of ridicule and
you hear about people talking about it like it's just.
I've been through it.
Nonstop. It's.
I tried to act, right? And I still am. I'm still auditioning every once in a while. But you talk about that, it doesn't compare to what we go through in football. It is more of a, you go into this room for 2 minutes or
a cold room of apathy.
Oh, yeah. And they're not even looking at you. They don't care. You're toning us off. Yeah. Who gives a shit, right? And you walk out of there just feeling really bad about myself, like really, really down. And that's why I look up to you guys, because this is your core business. This is what you do.
Well, I mean, there's a confidence. I mean, you probably have more, obviously, confidence in football. And then you get in there and you have less confidence because you're still feeling your way. You're like a shaky leg colt. You're getting better and better. But those things can really knock you down, because it doesn't take much in acting when you're newer to feel like shit. I feel like an asshole. And then fact, you just keep beating your head against a wall, because you always hear like the lottery. Just takes one. That's true. Just takes one thing to click. And then you're making 40 grand a week. And everyone's like, well, how'd you do it? You're like, I don't fucking know. I sucked for 100 in a row. And then somebody liked me. But that's sort of the gambling weird aspect of it.
And just, well, so you go to SNL, you get on SNL. I remember when I first got to the Kansas City Chiefs, I'm from LA. So Marcus Allen's on my team now.
Oh,
legendary.
Wow.
I'm looking around. There's Derek Thomas. There's Andre Bad Moon Rison. Marty Schottenheimer, this legendary coach. Like, so when you get to SNL, all of a sudden you're playing with your heroes. How did you feel?
Same thing.
When you got in that room, were you intimidated? Were you inspired? Like what
emotion
did
you have? Well, it's not like, you know, I'm going to say it's not unlike what you did, because I don't know how they would treat you, but everyone means well at SNL, but because you're there to take their place in a weird way, like might be. People are cordial, but they're not overly saying, you know, I thought they'd be like, four, he's the jolly good fellow, like Spade, you're on the show. Like, should we take you for a party tonight? Should we all go to dinner? It's on us. Everyone just closed their doors and they go, head writer goes, oh, there's your office over there. No one talked to me. Yellow pad and a pen. Host this week is Tom Hanks. See it, read through. And then you got to go, oh, I don't know how to write a sketch. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to write here. Open on. I mean, I'm a stand-up. I'm a middle act. I'm just kind of funny. I think kind of funny. They like the way I wrote my jokes. And I ran to Rob Schneider. He was with me. I go, dude, what are we doing? He's like, just write something. I go, I wrote a 15-page sketch with 92 sets. They're like, what the fuck is this? I go, I don't know what I'm doing. Someone guide me. Conan O'Brien was there and Bob Odenkirk, and they sort of guided me a little bit. Everyone's nice. They have their own shit to do.
Yeah.
And they're in their own world trying to get on the show that week. And if I get a sketch on, guess what? That means one of theirs is out. I didn't think that far ahead. I thought, oh, I'm their competition. Then they've got Dana Carvey there, who's a better version of me. So I'm there to like light a fire under him for some psychological reason. Like, we got a guy on the bench ready to go in. So you better work harder, Dana. And all the stuff's going on above my head, I don't even get. Dana was perfectly cool about it, but very tough. So I'm at the best place doing the worst. Uh-huh. So now I'm getting calls from Arizona. Dude, we stayed up. You're never on. Dude, what's going on over there? You're never on. Like, are they going to fire you? And then I sort of spun out there. It was very tough.
So when did you finally get comfortable with that? I mean,
2 years, three years.
So it took about 2 years for you to really settle in.
I mean, to get a groove where I'm on.
Yeah.
I went 9 shows. I wasn't anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck? They could fire me easily. No one's missing me. And then I see Adam go by me on a rocket ship. Here comes Farley. Here comes everybody. I go, even Schneider, everybody that he started with me, not even Schneider, but he was great. Copy machine. He was blowing through it. And I thought, because everyone was too good. It was such... It's like you going from college to the pros. I was like a high school guy going to the pros. I was so far in above my head.
I didn't know any of this. This is fascinating. And it's funny how, I mean, still, was that 25 years ago now or something?
Yeah, easy. Yeah.
So girls, what did you learn from that? Because obviously you're kicking after that, after SNL, you took off like a rocket
took
ship.
Took off because I was...
What happened during that time, though, that...
I worked so hard and trained with the best, like the Navy SEALs. Like, when I got out of there, no one could be as funny and as good as those guys and as hardworking. So all that stuff, I taught myself to work hard, to stay out all night, to write another sketch when I'm tired. Try this. And a lot of it's politics and this and that. But anything I could do in my control... Uh-huh. Show up on time, be good, have a good attitude. All the things they tell you that sound like bullshit, you find out later, people will hire you for a movie just because you're a good vibe. Uh-huh. I mean, you're pretty good. There's a lot of people that are pretty funny. I like him. He's cool. He shows up. They don't have to worry about him. Chris Rock told me, he goes, I'm a black guy that will show up. He goes, that's 90% of the reason I get hired. I go, is that how it works? He goes, yeah, they know me. They go, this guy might not. Rock will be there. So when it's between Rock and Antonio Brown, they take Rock. So he'll be there at practice. So it was a hard lesson on that show to the training. And then when I went to Just Shoot Me, I was adding jokes to my stuff. These are professional seasoned actors, comedic actors, but they're not. I'm like scribbling on my script and then I go, let me try this. So we do my take. I do 9 different jokes and they're like, oh shit. Now the writer's like, write for this guy. And then you score, and then I'm on a show where they're all great, but I'm like this cartoon doing jokes, but fine. We all got along great. And then that spins into movies, and then you're on Tommy Boy every night. We're going, Farley, let's write, we got to do some other joke in here. This is too flat, the scene. What can we say? Let's get you a clip-on tie, and then we'll do this clip-on joke. Anything. And just never get lazy, and that's why I look so beat up. You try. You got to keep trying because even today we're doing the show and are you good? Every meeting at Comedy Central matters. Everything matters. They're looking for any reason to go, he's not trying. He's not that good anymore. We'll get somebody else. They can always get someone else.
Yeah. But I think that's great though that do you ever think to yourself, man, I had to go through that to get to where I am now.
God damn. I almost Everyone says they would do it again in a second. I don't know. I could never handle that again.
It was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why people don't let their kids. Some football players don't want their kids in football because they get so beat up and they know how hard that world is. Same with acting. Like, you just don't want your kids susceptible to the mind fucking of how hard it is. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go through any depression? Like,
I mean, I won't say depression. I mean, I probably did, but back then you were just either a pussy or you weren't. So you didn't go around, I'm depressed. Everyone goes, oh, this guy. So I remember I had panic attacks at SNL.
Really?
After a while. And it's always turn on for the ladies. You're crumbling, shaking and crumbling at all times. But even when I started doing good on there, I remember I got pale. I got like skinnier. I was like malnourished for sure. I didn't have a vegetable that whole run. I didn't have a glass of water. It was just pasta, cheeseburger, pizza, eat, stay up late. I should have been doing cocaine the whole time. I was like the only guy in the history of SNL that wasn't. I'm like, why? I did some in college. I'm like, why am I stopping now? This is where I should do it. But I was scared of getting fired. Uh-huh. And I'm like, this is a show I got to be up till four every night. But I was like, I'll take another Diet Coke. And it didn't help. But you see how it gets to people and you see how they go bananas, because by the time they're famous, they've eaten so much shit.
Yeah.
That they're, even though they got it now, they're like, I'm already so fucked up.
Yeah.
I can't even see straight. Like, it's just, you see them dropping right and left. You go, it fucks you up.
Show business. Tough. Well then, so let's talk about your transition to what you're doing now with the show, Lights Out, Comedy Central. Were you scared? I mean, because you've gone from stand-up comedian, SNL, you've gone to the movies, whatever, all that stuff. And now you're doing you're hosting a late night talk show. How has that transition been for you?
It wasn't that hard for me because I did a pilot for them because I like the idea of talking about what's going on. I like the idea of staying in town. I don't really like interviewing people. That's not my thing. Like, even for you doing this, you're a great bullshitter. I've been with you at Riley's. We talk. You're personable guy, but it's just a slightly different muscle. Mm-hmm. You have to know timing. You have to know what's going on. I have to know when the commercials are. I have to know how to wrap somebody up. Well, I've done Ellen all these times. She's great at it, but she's so good you don't notice it. Mm-hmm. There's so many things going on at that Lights Out. I have 1,000 decisions a day. And by the time I get in front of the other comics, it's just basically a bullshit session with other comics, but I've got to get a joke in. I got to make sure they're funny. I got to make sure this is funny. I got to make sure we roll to this clip. We get out in time. We edit it afterwards. Want to make everyone look good. It's a little harder on me than I thought, but it's great. Uh-huh. I don't mind it. I mean, once you're 50, you go, hey, I'm a white guy. They're going to hire me for anything. Like, thank God they brought me in there and we have a great time and I just get to write jokes all day.
Yeah. Well, I've seen the show and it's incredible. Oh, good.
Thank you, bud. Yeah, it's really fun. It's something to do. And we had Nick Young, you know that guy, is a basketball player. We had him do stand-up last night. And
he did a stand-up comedy routine?
We gave an earpiece, took him to the comedy store, and Jeff Ross and I wrote jokes. We say, you have no idea what we're going to do. You're going to go up there. You say whatever we say in your ear. Audience doesn't know it. You're up on a regular comedy night. So we mixed him into the comics, and he walked up, and we go, hey, guys, what's up? And he goes, hey, guys, what's up? It's so crazy. It's like a social experiment. And to say to him something, he goes, I just want to let you know I'm one of the top 48 best players in Laker history. And he says it and he goes, you guys don't know I'm smart because I'm one of the only basketball players that thinks the world is round. And then he's saying this, but he's laughing as he's saying them because this is the first time he's hearing him.
Yeah.
And then we ended by going, I'm a lot like chicken. We both got fucked by the Nuggets. And he laughs so hard he can't get the joke out. And then he finally says it and we go, good night, good night. And he comes off and he goes, I was so scared, more scared than my life. Because that's stand-up.
Yeah.
It's such a weird world. And a lot of people go, I'd love to do stand-up. This was a crazy way to make someone do stand-up and have two professional comedians feeding them real lines. And he was doing well because, you know, if it's like, all right, he's never done comedy. And people that watch comedy shows go, these are actually good jokes. Like he's not like sucking. We're trying to give him actual stuff and he did about 8 minutes. It's fun. So
that just shows you how hard it is to actually get there, to make somebody laugh.
It's
like drama is easy, but to actually make somebody laugh.
When you watch a drama like in Venice, no one moves a muscle for 2 hours. And then at the end, standing ovation, you go, oh, I guess it went well.
Yeah.
Comedy. I've been in those test screenings of movies I do. If they're not laughing every minute, we're sitting in the back going, just shitting your pants going, oh my God. Oh my God. We need something there. Oh, why is it quiet? Why? Oh, that one didn't work. Shit. That's how sickening it is. Because you can tell if it's good or bad.
Uh-huh.
They have to make a noise. It's horrible. And it's harder to laugh. It's harder. It's better to stare at a drama like this. Laughing takes some energy.
Yeah, but I think the high.
Oh, it's great.
Of making somebody laugh. Mm-hmm. And this is anybody out there who's listening. When you tell a joke and you get the table laughing, it feels really good. I don't know if there's a better feeling. I mean,
it's fun, and that's why when women say, "Oh, I like a sense of humor," that's they mean that, but what they really mean is a specific sense of humor, because comedy is like music. It's like you say, like music. What type of comedy do you like? Do you like big, broad, crazy comedy? Do you like Curb Your Enthusiasm? Do you like Carrot Top? Do you like, there's so many comics and types of tone that when you do go out with someone that you, the girl I see now is exactly my sense of humor. So that's a great thing to click back and forth with, because that cracks me up what she says, and then she likes what I say. But there's people that are funny that I go, oh, they're funny. Not for me, but they are a funny person. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't make me laugh.
Well, I like that. It's a good transition there. You said the girl you're seeing right now. What? You've never been married, right?
No.
Okay, so I still think you're an expert. You've had relationships. What relationship advice would you give?
To anyone? I'm the worst.
What is the key? Well, maybe you're not. It doesn't mean you have to do it, though. What's your advice? What do you think is
worked? I'm better at being friends with people. I'm better. There's so many things I'm better at, but I think my advice would be, first of all, be yourself, because they're going to figure it out anyway. There's a lot of guys in town, especially, that are very showy, and I get it. We're all insecure. And my friend goes, he has a Ferrari keychain. He goes, I throw it down on the table so they see that. I go, horrible, gross. First of all, who are you dragging with a Ferrari? First of all, you don't have a Ferrari. Everything about this is wrong.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to get a gold digger, and then she's going to realize you don't have any gold, and then you're going to hate her because she's a gold digger. Like, it's all bad. So
Be true,
just, I guess. Be yourself, and then I guess keep it light. I after that, it gets too complicated.
Uh-huh.
It's very tough. Everyone I know is married, got divorced, and everyone, and then later they figure it out better, and they try to get married again, and they get a little closer to it. So it can work. I don't want to be a hater. I'm just saying, I'm not as good at it as some people. And I've ruined relationships because I'm not as good at it. Uh-huh. And it's tough.
Uh-huh. Do you want to be good at it?
I try to be, but man, I mean, you get set in the way you think and the way, it's tough. But I see people, we hear people that get divorced and they go, we were living in separate houses for the last 2 years. It's just hard to keep that up. There's a familiarity and a comfortability with someone you know really well, but it also comes with, every time I had a roommate, I hated them. Every time I had my brother in school, we lived in the same room. We'd fight all day. Like, I don't think there's a way not to get on each other's nerves and whatever. Sure. It's, you're better than me. I don't know. You give the advice.
Relationships are tough. I just love listening to people's
Other
advice.
People say it, yeah.
Yeah, well, I want to hear if I can pick something up. But I like that one. Be yourself. That's a good one.
Be yourself and be honest, because the bullshitting is hard to cover too. It's like, they're going to figure you out, dude. And if, like me, I like smarter girls. So that's a drag, because they're going to be onto your shit quicker. If you'd like ding dongs, then fine, all day. You can bullshit them and lie and that.
Oh, he's smart. I saw you skip third grade.
I skipped fucking. I could have. He loves this. Jonah Hill over here is loving it. I skipped third grade. I had the chance. I was in first grade and they said, do you want to go to fourth grade reading and math? And me and the Vietnamese kid were looking at each other, because we were both asked. And my mom said I was too much of a shrimp cocktail. She said, he gets beat up now. You think we're going to put him in fourth grade? In the school picture, it goes by height. It was me, girl, 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 next guy. So I was like this. So I think I was a pipsqueak. So I just walked down there to reading and math. And then I walked back to second grade. I go, hey guys, sorry. Just rolled down to fourth grade to meeting math. What's been going on here? Oh, we're doing fractions. What are you guys doing? Addition? Oh, embarrassing.
Parenting advice.
Yeah.
I know you have Harper. Any good parenting advice that you can give to us?
I think what I do with Harper is I don't spoil her. I grew up broke. I don't think it's horrible not to have everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think luckily she's pretty self-sufficient without a lot of stuff. You can get that whiff because they can bullshit you. But at Christmas, when you get that list of 500 things, you go, Jesus, I was worse than her. Her birthday was just now. They go, she wants this one game. And then she said, that's all she needs. She's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what kid says that? I'd be like this. And I think it's weird when rich people, because all my friends, I was saying earlier, I was dropping some names. I don't know if you could play them back.
Yeah.
But they all grew up poor. And they did well. And now the weird thing is you're rich.
Yeah.
Like Beyonce like has her kid do a lemonade stand. The kid's like, who are we kidding here? I got to make a nickel for lemonade. I'm getting 200 mil when I'm 18. Like, are we going to do this charade? So it's weird mentality. Like you want to instill some value, but if the kid isn't, if they have money and they have a net, there's something else. When I was a kid, I go, there's no net. My mom's crying. She can't pay rent. You know, if you don't have your money, you don't eat. It's just, there's no one to run to and go, hey, can you cover me? Sorry again. No relatives are rich. I was fucked.
I'm going to tell my wife, we should stop doing the lemonade stand, honey, for the kids. They made $25 last weekend, though. It's a good neighborhood around here.
Put a little Patron in there. You get a little business going.
Okay. Routines. Do you meditate?
Try to breathe.
Do you meditate?
I take a few minutes a day just breathing. I hold my breath all day. And then, but I do catch myself on the show lately because I'm not used to it. I get the shoulders up and I'm not breathing deeply. Uh-huh. And I go before the show and I go over the notes of what I have to do out there. And I try to just, it sounds dumb, but breathe in and out. I don't meditate, but that's what I do. I don't work out as much as you, obviously, but I meditate. I just try to breathe and get my head together. It's very hard to keep your head together in the showbiz.
Yeah. Yeah. What about sleeping? Are you a sleep guy? Like, I got to get my 8 hours of sleep or 7 hours of sleep.
In between lending my friends money, I try to get about 6 and 7 hours.
Uh-huh.
If I can get 7 hours.
And eat pretty healthy. I mean, you're in shape.
I'm at least.
You're in great shape.
Kind of skinny. I weighed 25 more than this. One time I always thought I weighed 140. I weighed 165 at the doctor on that old scale. I go, what the fuck? I have 25 pounds of mystery weight. I didn't even know what happened. I go, I'm always 140. He goes, you 165, fuck face. I go, oh, that's a little rough for a doctor. But I was asking this girl and she goes, oh, I gained all the weight in my boobs first. I go, what are you talking about? This is fucking a gift. If I gained it in my dick, I'd be crying to you about it. Like I'd be running around at Taco Bell eating a chalupa. So I was a little fatter, like during grown-ups, I was a little pudgier. And then even Rock said, you're getting in a Val Kilmer area. I go, oh, Jesus, when he was on the beach? He said, yeah, people are whispering. So it took me 2 years of trying to eat green drinks and be healthier because everyone's catching on. You have to take care of yourself. It's just impossible.
Supplements, any type of?
Yeah, well, I do a green drink every day.
Green drink, but no multivitamin or, yeah, or yeah. Microdosing,
little
that's
B12,
a big thing.
A little magnesium, a little this and that, but nothing too crazy because you get some of these things just turn into fads. Everyone's like, are you keto?
Yeah.
I'm like, keto, Kalen, yes. But I get it. You should try some, but overall, just the basics keep coming around. Uh-huh. Don't eat so much bread. Don't eat so much garbage. White sugar, white flour. And if you can avoid some of that, and make that a routine, not just a diet, like you actually do it every day, you just start to lose weight.
Uh-huh. Intermittent fasting, nothing like that.
I can't do that.
Okay. Final questions. Book recommendations.
Bob Honey, I'm reading Sean Penn's new book, Bob Honey. I just started it.
Good book?
I'm on page zero.
Okay. What's the best book you've ever read? Do you have any books that you would recommend?
What makes I did read 47 books in sixth grade. That was a record at the school. Didn't retain one bit of one of them, but because I can't even tell you one good thing from any book I've read in my life.
Uh-huh.
So I'll pass.
I'll pass. It's
like $20,000 pyramid. Pass.
Last meal. What meal would you eat? I'm into food. I want to know. Like, I usually ask it, what food would you make healthy if you could eat it all the time and it would actually improve your health? What would you pick? The one thing?
Well, I've gotten McDonald's down to once a month now. It was 3 times a week.
Uh-huh.
So I got it down to once a month. I'm not sold on this new bullshit, like impossible veggie burger. Like, I think it's still the same calories, I was told. It's just not red meat, right? Uh-huh. But it's still sort of garbagey. So I had that the other night. I was watching football and I had that. And I was like, I got that and a cheeseburger just to be like each one is this is a healthy one. It's all sort of a push, but I love cheeseburgers.
So that would be it, your cheeseburger?
Something. Yeah, pizza, cheeseburgers, like donuts.
Donuts, okay. Who would you want to sit down with, living or dead, in history, over a cup of coffee?
God dang, loved Elvis. grew up on Elvis because my mom brainwashed me. She played him all the time, so I liked it. But cool voice, good singing. Beatles. I like music. Beatles, Elvis. Mm-hmm. Those are good. Let's say those. No one really important, actually.
Well, Elvis is the king.
Yeah, the king is a stud, yeah. And if you can be that badass for that long, take it.
Any mantra that you live by? Or daily affirmation, something you tell yourself.
Just let's rage.
Let's rage. Arizona State.
And I'm a puss. ASU, I have 6 credits in anthropology. I might pick up the other 160 this summer. I don't know. I didn't graduate. Did you graduate college?
No.
You didn't? Didn't you go for some? I'm sure you had a million scholarships.
Yeah, I went to Berkeley.
Well, you know,
I didn't skip third grade, though, but I went to Berkeley.
I got stupider as I went along. That was the wrong way to play it. When I got to high school, I thought I was so smart. I didn't even try anymore. And then I couldn't even get into college. Like, what the fuck? I'm the genius. And they're like, you were. You stopped that in eighth grade. I was like at Princeton calling everyone. Anyway.
Okay.
I went to SEC.
Last question. The show's called Wide Open. What's one area of your life where you're looking to improve in that you're wide open to learning more about?
Ooh. I will learn more about the human body. Mm-hmm. Because my neck bothers me and this and that. I've always been around that. And I want to know the connection between psychology and actual pain and see if I'm my own worst enemy making pain or if it's real pain. Very complicated. They're going to find out one day that all these things doctors can't put their finger on. That should be good by now. You did it. Did you do this? And they go, it's starting. You're doing it yourself. Something about that. Blocking out things, making pain so you won't think about something else. I'm getting into that now and it's very interesting.
There is a lot of science out
there. There's something
that supports that, yeah.
Something there, Tony. Yeah. That's for the next time.
Flexible body, flexible mind.
I'll give you all my data.
Please.
Next time I come back.
The genius, the boy genius.
Yeah, I was smart. I keep telling, no one believes me, but I was smart.
David Spade, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, buddy.
Thanks.
Best of luck to you.
Hey, what's up, guys? If you enjoyed the podcast, let me know about it at TonyGonzalez88 on all social media platforms. I would love to hear from you. Feedback, what you liked, what you didn't like. I'm a big boy. I can take it because I want to make sure that I'm helping. You know, I want to help all you guys, gals, level up, be the best version of yourselves. We're all in this together. And the only way I can help you is by you helping me and letting me know in the comment section. Like I said, it's on all social media outlets at TonyGonzalez88.